Welcome to Chatter on Books. I'm your announcer, Jamie McIntyre. We attempted to come up with a creative introduction to the show, but our writers are on strike. Here's Tori Clark.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Chatter on Books. This is a very special edition of Chatter on Books. It's live Monday night. It's our first and possibly last actual live Zoom show via Chatter. And as I like to say, if you can't go home, go Zoom. Most people listening, watching on the show know I'm from Pittsburgh. I love Pittsburgh. So this is I'm getting my Pittsburgh on tonight because we're going to be spending some time with Susan O'Connor from the Penguin Bookshop, which is in Sewickley, PA, a small town outside of Pittsburgh where I grew up. And we're going to be talking to two of Pittsburgh's, they might not claim to be from Pittsburgh. I claim them to be from Pittsburgh. Two of Pittsburgh's finest, most interesting, exciting writers, Yona Harvey and Deesha Filia. Also unusual, since this is live and real, you can type in, send in questions, and we're going to be helped by Amanda Cohen a little bit later, who's going to moderate some of those questions for our authors, or David, because everybody loves David. And very importantly, Claude Jennings, of course, is doing everything important tonight. David Aldridge is joining me, and David, I'm going to start with you, my friend.
Hi.
In 100 words or less, how much do you love Pittsburgh, and what is your greatest covering sports experience in Pittsburgh?
I love Pittsburgh.
There we go. Show's over.
No, I do. We're seriously. Done. I'm not kidding. I love Pittsburgh. It's one of my favorite cities to go to.
Because?
There's a realness to it that I really like. You know, a lot of big cities, how do I say this? It's not that they're phony. It's just that there's a veneer to a lot of cities that it's kind of, you get used to it, but it doesn't mean you especially like it. There's some cities you go to, you go, you have to be, you're going to have to be like this when you're in this city, because that's what they expect. So with Pittsburgh, I just always enjoy my times there. I'd like going there. I've done a few, you know, Steelers games there. I've done some baseball games with the Pirates, believe it or not, when they've been good in the playoffs the last few years. So I really like it as a city. It's just kind of gritty and real, and it feels like I'm in a real city. I don't know how to describe it. I just feel different than a lot of other places I go to. And I love the drive in, because when you come from D.C., it's about a four-hour drive from D.C.
Yep.
And I just love coming in. I forget which tunnel it is that you come in off of 70. When you come into the city, it's pretty. It's really pretty. You know, the confluence, obviously, you all know that. I had one of the great meals of my life there.
It wasn't from anybody at 3 o'clock in the morning, was it?
No, it was a restaurant. What's the part of town that's up on a hill? What's that part called? The big part.
Mount Washington.
And they have restaurants there, right? And there was a restaurant there, and we had a great meal there one night. This was the night before an AFC championship game. So it was the Steelers. Might've been the year they lost, actually, to San Diego, to the Chargers. But I really like the city. I've been to the Warhol Museum. I think it's fantastic. I really enjoy it.
This makes me so happy. So Mount Washington is Pittsburgh. If you haven't been there, it's at the confluence of the three rivers, which you learned in like fifth grade geography. You learned that the Allegheny, the Monongahela meet to form the mighty Ohio. And you have to have that printed on your brain. But right across one of the rivers, you go up this very, very steep hill. And up at the top of the hill, Mount Washington, are these spectacular views of the city. And as David said, good restaurant. And if you grew up in Pittsburgh, outside Pittsburgh, that was the place where, you know, you'd go for grandma's 85th birthday. You might go for an anniversary. Or if you grew up in a family of five girls, when the boyfriend or the new husband, my sisters had several of them, would come to town, you'd take them over to Mount Washington, take them up to the top of the hill and have to ride. And I was the youngest of five girls. By the time I rolled around, a couple of boyfriends would come into town, like time to make the trek to Mount Washington. My dad and my mom would look at me and go, you don't need us, do you? You can get it on your own. Like, enough of that. So great. Okay, we were talking about the Steelers right before you joined us, David.
Yes.
Game moved to Wednesday?
Yes. It is a mess. It is
the wheels are coming off the NFL, right?
It's a mess. It's a complete mess. Now look, there's about, you know, $4 or $5 billion on the line here. So they're going to finish the season. That's going to happen. it's not going to be pretty, and there's going to be, I will not be shocked if there's a walkover at some point where there's 20 guys on a team that are just out and they can't, yeah. they can't field the team. But they're going to finish the season because they yeah. have to for the money. But yeah, it's a mess. It's a mess.
And are Steelers going to, and my Steelers going to end up on top? They do it.
I mean, you
at
know,
a certain point.
It's December and they're playing very well, but you, it's football. Everybody's one ACL yeah. away from disaster. You know what I mean? So
yeah. it is
the
amazing.
If one guy gets hurt, you're in trouble, but everybody's in trouble. So right now,
right.
they certainly look like them and Kansas City are the two best teams in the yeah. AFC.
Without, but now
I mean, there's wide separation between them and the rest of the league.
But set aside injuries, which are, because I listen to you and Tony and others, are a big deal usually at this time of the year, keeping yeah. people healthy through the playoffs. Now it's who can keep their team from being devastated by the pandemic.
Exactly.
How, because exactly. we really need X number of players to put on the field.
It's yeah. And that's the difficult part is that you can't control it. And you certainly can't control it on a team with 52 people on it. You know, it's,
yeah.
it's just hard. They're in meeting rooms together. I mean, we saw what happened in Denver. You don't even yeah. know if the other quarterbacks are positive or not. But they were in right. a room with a guy who's positive, so they have to assume that the yeah. other guys are, and they can't play. They couldn't play yesterday, so they literally had to start a wide receiver, a quarterback, and it was a disaster. It was ridiculous okay. to play that game under those circumstances. But they
why did they cancel the game? And right now, Deisha and Iona and probably Susan from the Penguin Bookshop are listening to us going, I thought I was on a show about books.
I know, it's ridiculous.
But we do. I'm sorry, guys.
Stop talking to me now is what I'm asking you to do.
Why didn't they cancel that game? By the way, I thought he did a terrific job and people should not be slamming that guy.
No. Right? It's baseball. I mean, it's like asking yeah. me to play quarterback. I mean, I could get under center. It doesn't mean I know what I'm doing.
I'd pay for that.
No, it's not his fault. No, they played the game for the money. That's why.
Yeah.
They have to
yeah.
finish the season to get money. And that's what yeah. they're doing. If that's why all these things are, it's why we're playing sports. Period this year is for the money. Everybody, basketball, mm-hmm. baseball, for everybody, for the money, of course, and college basketball too, and college football too. So, yeah.
We'll just keep throwing them out there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, fingers crossed for the Steelers, which last we checked had been moved to Wednesday. Okay. Let's bring in Susan O'Connor from the Penguin. Susan, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I know you have a lot going on, and our thoughts and prayers are with you and your family. So, thank you for doing this.
My pleasure.
I know the story of how you got to the, and if you're from Pittsburgh, this bookshop is called The Penguin. It's slightly over 90 mm-hmm. years of independent bookselling, but I know the story, which I think is fabulous. Tell us about how you got to be the owner of this great independent bookstore outside Pittsburgh.
Okay. So, well, just for those of you out there who may not know the story of The Penguin Bookshop, it was founded in 1929 in Swickley, PA, which is a suburb outside of Pittsburgh, about 12 miles outside. By, I don't know if I said 1929 or not yet, but in 1929 by two women, Eleanor Gilchrist and Isabel Adams, whose favorite book was Penguin Island by Anatole France. Hence the name, The Penguin Bookshop. It has nothing to do with Penguin Books in New York, except that it's a lucky coincidence because I actually worked at Penguin Books in New York for over a decade before moving to Pittsburgh, and then years later worked at the Penguin as a bookseller. And when the store became available for sale in 2013, I was working there as a bookseller, and I loved working there. Really didn't think that I would be able to buy the store. But the previous owner, her name was Janet McDaniel, worked with me because she was committed to keeping the store in the town and to just keeping the store going. She wasn't, this is also like a very Pittsburgh thing, like David was saying. I moved here from New York City. I grew up in Cleveland, but hadn't lived in this area for a very, very long time. But one of the things for sure that struck me about Pittsburgh right away was the authenticity of people and people's genuineness and kindness. And that it's like, no one is trying to prove anything. Everyone's just like, this is who I am. So Janet, a true Pittsburgher, and devoted to the town of Swickley as well. And as like this just great businesswoman, we sat down together over lunch after getting our lawyers out of the way. And Janet and I worked out a deal that worked out for both of us. And I was able to purchase the business. I had to find a new location for it, which I luckily just across the street, there was a rental property that met our needs. And so I moved it from the previous location into our new location. So we've been there since the beginning of 2014. And I'm happy to say that we're strong. And even during COVID times, it's been unbelievable. It was scary in March, but our community has really risen up and just supported us like crazy. And we had a record-breaking weekend for Black Friday and Small Business Saturday.
That's just great.
And our online orders, you know, we used to do, you know, I don't know, a few online orders a week. And now we have like a ton of online orders. Our online orders have increased by over 100%, and they are still rolling in. So that combined with our doors opened again in May.
Talk about that pivot. A few weeks ago, Dave and I had the chance to talk with Hannah Depp Oliver, who runs Loyalty Books down here in the DMV.
Mm-hmm. I love Hannah. Yeah.
And she cracked us up talking about how she never knew she really needed to understand shipping and packing and the post office, but the postal service became her new best friends. Talk about life before the pandemic. And again, I know the Penguin pretty well, and you are your heartbeat of that community there, and the pivot you had to make when the pandemic hit.
Gosh, I mean, really, when I look back, it's like a blur. Those months, those days and weeks and months just all blur together. But what we did is, first of all, we stayed open for as long as we could. You know, we were all wearing masks, and then we were told we had to shut down. Of course, we totally agreed and complied with everything. And then the online, we just started to reach out to people via social media and signs in our window that you could still buy books from us. You just couldn't walk into the store. So we were doing curbside pickup. We were doing phone orders because we're a small community. People were texting us. People were just, you know, DMing us and all sorts of things. But then people started to discover our website. People who had shopped with us for years and years were like, oh my God, I didn't know I could shop on your website. So everyone was discovering our website, and then it just started to roll. And it was really just myself and my manager, Mary, in the store processing every single day. We'd get there in the morning, we'd leave in the evening. We were just processing the online orders, and we were, you know, if we didn't have the book in the store, we were bringing books in, or we were doing direct-to-home shipping from our distributor, Ingram, and we were wrapping books, and we were taping, and we were going to the post office, and it was like a two-person warehouse.
Nice.
And it was very true. It's like you don't suddenly our tasks and our whole focus was on shipping books out of the store, and it was great to have the business. But it was really, really hard work. It was like twice the work for each sale, because, you know, it's the easiest thing is someone walks through the door, they walk up to the counter and they say, I want this book. We say, we have it. We sell it to them. They walk out.
Right.
But now that wasn't possible. And there were all these extra steps that, of course, cost money and, you know, involved a lot of time. And we were so grateful to have it. But yeah, we were working our butts off.
Yeah.
We worked our butts off to keep things going, and so we could open the doors again in May.
And you guys also got ramped up pretty quickly on virtual author events, right?
Yeah. Well, it took us a while because first, I mean, there were other people, absolutely, you know, some stores in your town. I think, I don't know if when Hannah got ramped up, but like Politics and Prose, they were on board with that pretty fast. Because we're such a small store, I mean, there are advantages and disadvantages to being the size store that we are. The advantages are that we can bob and weave very easily because we don't have a huge staff. But the flip side is that Mary and I were so focused on fulfilling the online orders and just keeping the business going and keeping us afloat that like doing virtual events was the last thing on my mind. So we didn't really start to refocus.
Forget those authors. Can't think about those authors.
It was just, we just didn't have the resources.
Yeah.
And it was like the Wild West out there. Like nobody knew, like some people were switching to them. Some people just canceled altogether. It was really a fluid situation.
Yeah.
So things started to calm down over the summer. And then by August, we were ready to ramp up our events again. And one of the best ones we had was with Disha Filia and Yona Harvey.
Yeah.
Two guests tonight.
Thanks for bringing them back.
Absolutely. And Disha, it was sort of amazing because one of the first ones we had was Megha Majumdar, who wrote A Burning, one of my favorite books of the year. And just after we had her, she was longlisted for the National Book Award, and Disha was on our schedule. We hadn't had her yet, but then Disha was also nominated. So I said, well, the Penguin Bookshop is really like throwing some good luck out there, because we had two like National Book Award longlisted nominees on our schedule, like back to back. And
Pretty
I just felt
nice.
so grateful, and it was so exciting, and it really kicked us off and got us off to a great start. And then when Disha and Yona decided to have a conversation together, it was just like it was just so wonderful. And Yona's poetry is and Secret Lives of Church Ladies is delicious as well. So just feel really grateful to both of them, and they're terrific books. And you know, Pittsburgh, homegrown, and people who have come in. I think the community, the writing community and literary community, has it's just been growing and growing and getting like
Yeah.
richer and richer. And the Penguin Bookshop is lucky to have, you know, been a part of that, and to have so many wonderful authors come through our doors. Since I've owned the store, going on 7 years now, we've had an
Yes.
amazing
Yeah.
authors.
What are your customers reading these days? And has it changed at all because of the pandemic? I know we can't keep you
Well,
forever, so let me get you out with this. How have your customers changed if they have over the pandemic?
our customers started to shift a little bit in 2016. We started noticing 2016, 2017, we really started to see a shift toward books on politics, current events, and social justice issues. And then with the Black Lives Matter over the summer, those books just exploded. And then also just like books on female empowerment and women, and it was really very affirming to see that kind of interest out there, and to have people be so passionate about those topics, and to be seemingly wanting to learn and to know more, you know, about what was going on. And then so other than that, like, and then on the nonfiction, well, on the nonfiction side, this sort of goes along with it. Isabel Wilkerson's Cast is an absolutely stunning book, and one of my personal favorites, and one of the best-selling nonfiction books at the store currently. And then, you know, people are loving their fiction and reading a lot of fiction. There are a lot of great novels out there. One of my favorites is Brian Washington's Memorial, which has been doing really well for us. We have Britt Bennett's The Vanishing Half, still going super, super strong in hardcover. Yeah, Jesse. Someone tell me the title of that, because I want to say Homegoing, but that's her previous one. And yeah, just a lot of fiction. We have Leave the World Behind. Rumon Alam is really getting a lot of traction. So a lot of fiction. You know, they're just
Good.
reading in general. So we're selling a lot of
So
books. We're
they're not
reading.
reading about pandemics. You
You
talk
know
about
that.
how you had Disha on the show and she gets longlisted for the National Book Awards and shortlisted months and more over a year ago. I'm not really sure why this came up, but we had this funny thing on the show and talking about books that people should read. And Michael Kornheiser's on the show sometimes, who has taught in various schools, suggested Station 11, which is a horrifying book
Emily
about,
Mandel.
yes, about a pandemic. And it all has kind of come true. So we kind of try to stay away from the book prediction front. But
Well, I mean, we sold a few more of those, and then Lori Garrett's book, The Coming Plague.
yes.
Also, we saw, you know, an uptick in sales on that. But I think for the most part, like in terms of the pandemic, I mean, people did read books about the flu. There are a couple out there about the, you know, the 1912 flu. But I think for the most part, people were just looking for good reads, you know, especially at this point.
Give us.
We had Ellen Hildebrand on last week. I think it was just before Thanksgiving. And, you know, Ellen has such a strong and passionate following. And her books are just totally like, it's like reading a Lifetime movie.
Right.
You know, and like, if you want to
nothing wrong with that. I was watching one of my Hallmark Channel movies this morning at 6:30.
Exactly. I actually, someone asked me, what are you reading right now? And I said, you know what? Rate this just for these like few days. I'm just reading an Ellen Hildebrand novel because I just want like a love story and somebody to take me away.
It's a little bit like comfort food. Okay. Give us one holiday book recommendation.
Oh man, I just gave you about 10, I think.
You gave us about 10. Okay, but if you could only pick one, what would you pick?
Oh, A Promised Land, Barack Obama.
Okay, yep.
Yeah.
David and I have, David, our mixed feelings about A Promised Land and Barack Obama's memory?
I mean, not mixed feelings. I just think all political, when people write about when they're in the White House, they tend not to actually tell you what went on in the White House, you know? They give you
but
their
he's gone. The thing that's different. Oh, I'm sorry, David, you interrupted.
No.
I mean, the thing that's different, I actually, full disclosure, haven't started it yet. After the holidays, I will. I have 3 people in my family all reading it, my husband and my 2 sons. My one son said, and I quote, it's a masterpiece. He's a writer. I mean, there's nobody like Barack Obama. He's a writer. Well, I'm a huge fan, obviously, but I think that his book is going to be one of the really great ones, and that people are going to read like forever. And so it's been getting rave reviews. And so if I was going to buy something really special for someone, nonfiction, I would buy A Promised Land. And then novels, that's really personal.
Hard.
Really personal. Yeah. But all the novels I mentioned earlier, I highly recommend. And there's a novel I liked earlier in the year, Sue Miller, Monogamy.
Yes.
But great I book. Know, and it was on the best list of the 100 notable books on the Times. But I also know that book is not for everyone. I mean, I love like domestic drama written by women, and I love just like interior lives, like, you know, explored. And I don't mind some sadness as long as it's not, you know, as long as I'm not going through too much sadness in my own life at the time. So I love Sue Miller's Monogamy. And
great.
Come into the Penguin Bookshop or go online. And also, because I'm not going to be able to stay for the whole podcast, I did want to say, Tori, invite all your Amanda, just put our mixture. Amanda, you put our link in the if you can hear me, Amanda, put our link in the chat and put our
yes.
And Amanda, if you have time, put Disha's and Yona's
absolutely.
The links to buy their books from our website. We'll give you, if they mention the podcast, we'll give you 20% off your
excellent
purchase. And if you want any personal recommendations, you can send me an email. So Amanda, just put my email, if you don't mind, in the chat, and feel free to reach out to us.
This is why I love Zoom. You can do business in real time.
Oh, for sure.
Susan, I know there is so much going on. So thank you for doing this. Thank you for introducing us to Disha and Yona.
Absolutely.
Thank you for keeping the Penguin going 90 plus years. We wish you the best of
my
luck.
Honor.
Absolutely.
My honor.
Best
and
of luck.
Thank you.
I know it is.
And Tori, thank you for bringing, thank you for thinking of us, and thank you for bringing the Penguin Bookshop into DC and into your podcast.
Absolutely.
And it was nice to meet you all, except for Disha and Yona, who I already know and love, and you have to buy their books. So
awesome.
Thank you.
Well, bye, everybody.
Bye, Susan. Take care of yourself.
I will.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Yona and Disha, thank you so much for being with us and staying with us for, you know, Sports with David Aldridge, which is great. Okay, so Yona, Harvey and fill you on the last name. So I'm going to go Harvey first, because that alphabetically is first. You're an award-winning poet, and we'll talk a lot about your absolutely beautiful book, You Don't Have to Go to Mars for Love. And on this show, I can actually hold it up and show people because it's beautiful. But what makes you cooler as a teacher at the University of Pittsburgh? Is it that you write these beautiful books of award-winning poetry, or that you have written for Marvel Comics?
I think I think with the undergrads, definitely the Marvel Comics is a big draw.
Tell us about this. Are they just in awe of you?
I don't know that they're in awe of me, but they geek out about comics and Marvel. So, yeah.
So you're one of the very few Black women writing for Marvel Comics, right?
Right.
And you are a writer, or you write for Storm, an amazing character.
I did, yes.
And you're one of the few people who can legitimately talk about Wakanda and not sound like an idiot, which, you know, middle-aged white person from Chevy Chase, Maryland. I cannot. Tell us about this. How did you get into writing for Marvel Comics?
Well, really, everything for me begins with poetry. So it really was my connection to poetry that led to Marvel, because my friend Ta-Nehisi Coates was writing the most current run of Black Panther at that time. So we were just texting and talking about it. I was telling him how excited I was about the first few issues that I'd read. And then that conversation led to me writing for Marvel, because he was like, do you want to write a comic? And I thought, yeah, that's great. I sure do. Thinking in my head, someday that'll be great. But he meant right then and there.
Right.
So I think if I had known that, I probably would have freaked out. So it was good that, you know, things can get lost in translation.
Absolutely.
In
That's text. Why you have to do it when the opportunity arises. Right. Talk about poetry and comics. Similarity, what your background in poetry, how did that help you with comics or not?
Sure. I think probably the biggest similarity has to do with the visual. So being a visual thinker, being an art lover too. And so I don't know if how many people out here are actually poetry lovers, but just, you know, when you think about the lines breaking in a poem, to me, that's very similar to the panels shifting and the pages turning in a comic. So, you know, when you flip the page and you get that big splash on the next, on the other side, or the surprise reveal, to me, that's very similar to the way you break lines in poetry. So that's super stimulating and fun to play around with that.
Did you have favorite comics growing up?
You know, it's funny. I wasn't really a Marvel girl growing up. I was more, there was like Brother Man comics. I read comics a little bit later in life. So in my early or late teens as a college student, because I had friends at Howard who started a comic book company. And so that's when I started to read them, like Batman, Brother Man.
David, were you a comics guy growing up, or was it, I want to be shortstop for the Yankees?
Yeah, neither. That ended quickly. No, I mean, no, I'm not the serious comics. I mean, you know, I'm old enough to have, Archie and stuff like that. Stupid stuff.
Right.
Not the meaningful stuff. And then you start, you know, at that time, comics were kind of in a dormant period, you know, in the 70s and the early 80s. Wasn't a whole lot going, and certainly not in the MUC universe. There just wasn't a lot going on. There's new stuff. I don't think, maybe I'm wrong, but so it was totally different back then.
When Marvel Comics, and Yona, maybe you can tell us, I can't remember when they really took off, but I do remember the time, because as people listening to the show, watching the show know, I think very visually, which is my excuse for being stupid. So I think very visually. And there was a period there, I must've been pretty young, and I thought Marvel Comics, and I was kind of into it. And then all the characters made me feel so damned inferior. It's like, well, I'm not built like that, and I can't do those superhuman things. And so I got turned off it for many years. Okay, Disha, you're still with us, Disha Harvey? This is not a competition, Disha, but what do you have that is as cool as Marvel Comics?
Well, first, I just want to shout out Archie Comics, because those were the comics I read into college. I was still buying them at the grocery store checkout. But for the same reasons we all like Happy Days, like it was that sort of nostalgic, that era that not great for Black people in real life, but somehow, you know, it was just something appealing about those very simple stories, you know, Archie, Jughead, you know, Veronica, Betty, all the archetypes. It was so predictable. And I was also just a big Sunday comics reader. Like I would get this, we got the Sunday paper when I was growing up, and I would, you know, plow through it and get the comics and always read, you know, Archie. It was, you know, there was a sequence to it or whatever. And I read the majority of them. So, I've never been Marvel or DC or anything like that.
So how do you go from Archie comics to bank executive? Which was your chosen career, but we've never had a bank executive before. We've had lawyers, astronauts, dog walkers who have become.
And I'm not a bank. I was never a bank executive. I have an economics degree that I've never used. And then I was an elementary school teacher for a couple of years. I taught fifth grade. And then when my then husband and I started a family in my late 20s, I was a stay-at-home mom, and that's when I started writing. And fast forward, I mean, over the course of like the last 20 years that I've been writing, there were three of those years from 2016 to 2019 where I worked at a bank in corporate communications. But I was, you know, not considered, you know, an executive by any stretch. Now in banking, something I learned is you get in some banks, you get assigned a VP title or like assistant VP. It doesn't mean anything. It literally, unless you're like an executive vice president or senior vice president, it's just like with the pay levels and stuff. And so I always laugh when I see people saying I was an assistant vice president such as a bank. And I'm like, yeah, I know what that means. So sorry for any confusion on that, but that was sort of a blip in my career path. But most of the last 20 years I have spent as a freelance writer.
How did you get to Pittsburgh?
My ex-husband, the first one, is from Bellevue.
Okay. Sure.
Yeah. So just down the road from Swickley.
So when he told you you were moving to Bellevue, Pennsylvania, what was your first reaction? That's it. Well, the marriage is off.
So, well, we lived in New York and Connecticut back and forth. We met at Yale. And so we stayed in that area for a few years after graduation. And then, but neither of us liked that pace of life at all. And certainly when we started a family, we wanted to be close to our own families. And I'm from Florida. We didn't have any interest in moving back to Jacksonville. And so we decided to come back here. And initially, we still went north of the city, not Bellevue, but, you know, we were in Ross Township, then we were in Wexford. And I didn't like it at all because it was just it was the suburbs. I felt very isolated. And as you know, the arts community is in the city. It's in the east. Right. And so we moved to the east, and the move to the east coincided with me becoming a writer in the early 2000s. And so I ended up, we were in Edgewood and then Forest Hills, and now I'm in Wilkinsburg.
Sure. I just, if people watching will see this show, it makes me so happy to hear these names. But unlike Deisha and Yona, who have these literary references and things they were doing, I hear Wexford or I hear Bellevue and go, oh, I remember this great bar that I used to go to, right? When I was 18 years old. Okay. Let's talk about The Secret Lives of Church Ladies, which is, also has beautiful cover art. And you don't have to go to Mars for love. Let me start. And by the way, send in, you know, type in wherever that little box is, type in your questions so Amanda can moderate some questions near the end of the show. So Secret Lives of Church Ladies, it's this incredible collection of short stories about Black women, and it's their loves, it's their relationship with their church, with their families. Did you plan a common thread and write the stories to fit the common thread? Or how did the collection of these stories come together? Because I found some very common themes running through all of them. But did you intend it that way? Or did you write them separately and individually? And then somebody said, put these in a book.
A little bit of all of that. Initially, I was not intending to write a collection. I had been trying to write a novel. And the thread for me in my writing had always been dissatisfied women. But I was not conscious of the fact that all of them still had roots in the church, and not surprising because I was still very, you know, much of my life, the first 35 years of my life were very rooted in the church. And so I was not sad. I was dissatisfied. And so an outlet for me for that, sorry, my dog, That's okay. Was to write about it in fiction because I wasn't comfortable writing nonfiction about myself. And so that was the theme. And then when the novels that I was working on, you know, there was one in particular that I was really invested in, but it stalled. And I took a detour and wrote a co-parenting book with my ex-husband. And that's how I got an agent. And she was very eager for that novel. And in the meantime, I started writing short stories. And again, these church ladies showed up, but I wasn't thinking of them that way. And I had done some events where I was reading these stories. And after one of the events, my agent said, you know, while you're on hiatus from this novel, maybe you can pull together a collection of these church lady stories. And so wow. She was the one that saw the thread. And uh-huh. That's when I got intentional. So I had two stories where I wasn't thinking collection. And then at the stories that followed, I was very intentional about it.
And awesome stories. Okay. Do you have a favorite? Because I have a favorite.
Oh gosh. It's like choosing your favorite kid.
La la la. Yeah.
I know.
On any given day, I have three children. I can choose a favorite. Trust
I
me.
I have a favorite kid. That's not
yeah, exactly. David's got a favorite kid.
So I always answer this by saying peach cobbler, because they're a couple that are like, there's like a tie, but the tiebreaker is that it seems to be so many people's favorite story. And I like to be able to tell people who want to write and get published that this story got a lot of rejection. It's never been published anywhere except my collection. And yet now it's a favorite of so many readers. And so that just reminds of us of how subjective this industry is.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to not lose hope just because something gets rejected.
Yeah. Okay. How to Make Love to a Physicist.
Is that your favorite?
Come on. Absolutely. Absolutely. Tell us about, I couldn't do justice to it. So tell us about How to Make Love to a Physicist.
Okay, so it is
something that David and I will never experience, by the way.
Hey, speak for yourself. No, probably not. Definitely not. Hi, honey. Love you.
See, you're getting people in trouble. It was inspired by a real life physicist that I had a crush on. But it was not meant to be, but I was crushing really hard. And the first line came out of that crush, which is, how do you make love to a physicist? It has to happen on Pi Day. It's a wrap. You know, I don't remember what the whole line is, but and that sat there for like a year or so. And then it was like, oh, I'm writing stories for this collection. I want this in here. I don't know where I'm going to go. I don't know who this person is who's thinking about this. But I just sort of went with it, and I knew that it was going to be a love story. I had to figure out who the people were. I knew it was going to have physics in it, and I am not a science person. So I actually went to the physicist who we're still friends. And so I needed, you know, he was my, you know, the research for the science stuff and also some of the science religion stuff. All of that came out of my conversations with him. So in that sense, that was the only story that I did. Well, no, not the only one. I did some research for Jael, but How to Make Love to a Physicist was probably the most heavily researched story. But yeah, it came out of a crush, unrequited crush.
Don't the best things. It just rolls. I don't know how to describe it, but the story just rolls. And you just want to keep reading line after line after line. Okay, Yona, let me bring you into this. You've read The Secret Lives of Church Ladies. Do you have a favorite?
That's also my favorite, How to Make Love to a Physicist.
Yay! Why do you love it? Because you're a writer, so you could put it in writer words.
It has so many poetic moves in it. First of all, just that refrain, repeating that over and over. And just,
awesome. Okay, let's talk about your awesome collection. You don't have to go to Mars for love. And the first question I have, because I'm a visual person, is the cover art. And the artist's name is Dorsey, right?
Right.
How did you pick that and why for this collection?
There was a painting that I loved. This is the shortest version I can tell. Yeah. There was another painting that I really loved that I wanted to buy. And Najee was the person representing that artist.
Uh-huh.
So in making a move to get that painting, I discovered Najee's
Dorsey. Wow. Yeah.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
He actually teaches people how to collect art. It's a big thing. He and his wife and another team member, they're very big on helping, well, Black people specifically acquire art without getting taken.
It's so. Just beautiful. Well, yeah. Everybody should learn that lesson. Okay, let's talk about the title poem, You Don't Have to Go to Mars for Love, which same thing. I can't think of another way to describe this, but you want to just keep reading and reading and reading. How did you come up with that one?
It came out of another kind of project. So I used a computer voice to record the audio for that poem. And so there's a visual art, there's a multidisciplinary artist here, Casey Droege, here in Pittsburgh. And she commissioned a bunch of us to respond to the theme of symbiosis. And so marriage kept coming up for me at that time.
It's fabulous. Okay. My second favorite one, the subject of surrender.
Oh, wow.
Which for the less informed, articulate of us, it's like Mad Libs. I don't know how to describe this, which is why you have to buy this book. You don't have to go to Mars for Love. But it's like Mad Libs, but it's multidimensional, or it creates multidimensional thinking for me. But what was your inspiration behind that?
I love that. That's so interesting that you would.
Thank you. We can stop the show now. Someone smart has said it's interesting.
I don't know that I had, some underlying idea for
it. Did you like Mad Libs when you were a kid?
I did. I loved Mad Libs.
There you go. There you go. All right, what's your favorite in your collection?
Ooh.
You don't have to go to Mars 12. Come on, you have to pick one.
I have to pick one?
Yeah.
I don't know that I have a favorite, but I love to read Segregation Continuum. So,
awesome. Okay, here's a question for both of you. And so, Yona, we'll ask you first, and you tell us this about Disha's work. And then, Disha, same question to you. Why is it right now both of your collections have created such a response? So, Yona, you about Disha's book, The Secret Lives of Church Ladies. What is it that's going on right now that caused this incredible response to this book?
I think for Disha's book, it's so real.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's of course it's genius. It's well crafted. It's poetic. It's all of that. But for when I was lucky enough to read it early on, I think the thing that really resonated with me was it is like Black women are at the center of these stories, and it sort of calls back to me like Toni Cade Bambara, Bebe Moore Campbell, just a certain, it's just very women centric, and it's not all MFA'd up, which that is no shade to MFA people. Please do not.
Don't at me. Don't at me.
Right. Don't at me.
So yeah.
That's, nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Disha, same thing about Yona's work. Why right now?
Well, I have a very self-centered answer. I can tell you why.
You're
right
on the
now
right show,
for,
my friend.
For
You're
me?
On the right show. Because I have exercised so much restraint not making every Christmas reference about me, but go ahead.
And this is something that Yona and I have talked about, and it's something that I just admire in her work in general and in her as an artist. And I don't know if she intends it, but this notion where I always see her playing on the page to create serious art. And that is genius to me, where you every time you're turning the page and there's something unexpected. She's doing something with the names of flowers, and there's this intentionality. And then there are the pop culture references. And then there's, I think about You Don't Have to Go to Mars for Love, which it tells from the genesis to the end of a relationship, but with these this mode of the outer space and the technology woven through it, which is just clever and playful and inventive. But to talk about it in the larger moment, people are seeing what we as Black women have always seen in ourselves, which is our genius, which is our multifacetedness, the playfulness, the seriousness, the wisdom, the Shaka Khan, the booty, all of those things together. and just the alchemy that happens when we bring together all of these things that we find interesting. There's a, Yona was talking about the MFA-ness of everything, and there's always this talk about, you know, the male gaze or the white gaze. But one of the many things that I admire in Yona's work and that I think draws people to her work is you can tell she doesn't give a damn about any of those gazes, that, you know, that there's just a genuineness and authenticity. And she's a writer's writer in that sense.
Yes.
That you look, you read for pleasure, and then you're like, how did she do that? You know, the next time around, and then you can read for so many reasons, and the work is fresh every time you read it. So
it's interesting that you said that, because I found myself going back. Not that she's cooler because they're Marvel Comics, Disha. No disrespect intended. But I found
she is cooler.
She's cooler. But I found myself with Yoda's work. Really, I would read it and go, okay, this is as David and Claude know well, I did not start this whole thing a couple years ago being a fan of poetry, but I was reading it going, okay, I love that. And then I would go back and read it again and go, loved it better this time. Just loved it better this time. And you start to see things and feel things you didn't see before. Okay, let me bring in Amanda, if Amanda has not fallen asleep thus far. Amanda's from The Penguin, which we love. Amanda, thanks for joining us.
Of course.
Isn't that cool? What's that cool picture behind you that we can see on this live Zoom show on Chatter on Books?
Which one?
That looks like a military officer up in the...
Oh, that's just my grandfather.
Just your grandfather.
That's my grandfather.
Just your grandfather. Well, you know, God bless him for his service. Okay, do we have some questions we should ask our wonderful authors here before we lose them?
We don't currently have any that have shown up in the chat, but if I may,
intimidated.
Opportunity to ask.
Go.
And Yona, what have you been reading during the pandemic, or have you been navigating or gravitating towards certain types of literature during the pandemic?
I've been reading The Dead Are Arising. So that's the new Malcolm X biography. It's really good.
What makes it good?
It's very intensely written.
Uh-huh.
And it's unsentimental. And right. I don't know, it's just got, maybe that's because Les Payne was a journalist. Yeah. So there's just something that's very appealing about that to me.
I'm terrified to read that book.
Really? Yeah, it's
terrible. David, why?
Because one of my all-time favorite books is the autobiography of Malcolm.
Oh, okay.
It's my top two or three.
Right.
I don't want anything to be that.
It's very different in tone. You do need to be prepared for that.
It's probably more accurate, right? And it's
I gotta read. But it won't. It doesn't take anything. I don't, you know, you don't read it and feel like you have to let go. Okay. The Alex Haley one. You really don't. So
right. Okay.
Yeah. Different mode. Yeah.
Amanda, same question to
yes.
Lisa?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I'm reading a couple or I'm either reading or have recently finished a couple of things. A great collection of poems called Finna by Nate Marshall, which just plays wonderfully with language and vernacular. And then there's a book I read that was not on my radar until I was on in conversation with Kelly Jo Ford, and we found out that we would be talking to each other about our respective books, so we both had to read the other person's book. And it's called Crooked Hallelujah, and it is a phenomenal book. It's fiction, but it reads like nonfiction. It's about four generations of Indigenous women and sort of the role that the church plays in their lives and in their relationships. And then keeping with the Hallelujah theme, here in Pittsburgh, a poet, Kelly Stevens Kane, her collection came out last month. It's called Hallelujah Science. And that just arrived in the mail today, so I haven't had a chance to crack that one open. And finally, I'm reading a collection of short stories called The Office of Historical Corrections, which is a novel and short stories from Danielle Evans. And nice. I am going to be doing a podcast appearance called The Stacks. And we're talking about my book, and then the host and I are reading this book together. And then we're going to talk about Danielle's book. So I'm really excited.
That sounds like a lot of work, which we didn't
get.
Amanda, what are you reading?
I actually just picked up the Office of Historical Corrections.
Hey!
So I'm excited to get started on that one.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, well, our two authors are clearly just so impressive that our watchers or viewers are even more intimidated than David and I are. But I've gotten questions emailed to me during the day, the last couple of days, for both of you, Disha and Yona. I'll get you out with this, and then we'll do a little housekeeping and close out with one last question. But I'll get you both out with this. What's your best, most practical advice for young people who want to be writers? Is it find the great physical locale like Pittsburgh, PA, which can be very inspiring? Is it the people you hang out with? Is it the thing you do? What's your best advice? And I bet you get this all the time. And Yona, I'm sure you get it from your students. But what's the best advice you have for a young person who really wants to be Disha or Yona someday? And we'll do reverse. Disha, you go first. And then Yona, you go second.
Okay. I'll give the best advice that someone gave me. I wasn't super young when I got it. I was in my early 30s.
You were a baby.
It was, don't worry about getting published, worry about getting better. And I think a corollary to that is that writing is work. It is absolute work. And it is, writing is rewriting. And so learning craft, reading as a writer, putting in the work to grow as a writer is more important than getting published. And I needed to hear that because all I wanted was to get published so I could get validated. I wanted to get published at The Sun and The Atlantic. And I was not writing anything that was even remotely a good fit for either of those publications. But that was my focus until someone kindly gave me that advice, which is not what I wanted to hear at the time, but it's what I needed to hear.
Excellent. Yona?
That's great. I'd probably say, you don't need anyone's permission. So you don't need Marvel to give you the go ahead to make a comic. You know, just all you need is a notebook and a pen. And then maybe a trusted reader, a friend to go back and forth.
Yeah, bounce things off.
Yes.
David, it's not dissimilar from, you get approached by young people all the time who want to be David Aldridge. Same kind of advice?
Same hire. Yeah, no, I mean, look, it's all about, to me, the best writers are the best readers. To me, I mean, I think people who I'm always, everybody steals from everybody else, but it's not even stealing, it's learning. You know, it's really learning. Just about pace, tempo, ideas, thoughts, emphasis, all of those things. And when you read people who really are good at this, it inspires me. It still does to this day.
Yeah.
Good to read people that really are good at this because they change the world. They literally change the world. So,
and I think all three of you who changed the world in your own special ways, you don't talk about this, but I've read enough about all three of you and I've read enough, watched enough interviews. It's hard work. Yeah. People who aren't writers like to think it's this airy fairy. Oh, well, someone's a good writer. Or they learned how to write. And it's just this wonderful creative thing that just kind of flows from you. But really good writing is rewriting and rewriting and rewriting, and it's hard work and it's doing research when that's not what you really love to do. I think sometimes people lose sight of just how hard the work actually is, but we're so glad you do it because then we get to read these fabulous books. Okay, I have a little bit of housekeeping and then I have literally, I swear to God, one more question for everybody. But we are back on December 7th with Bill Buford. And if you don't know Bill Buford, you've got to look him up. An icon of the New Yorker for many years, and he often would end up writing books about things his writers didn't want to write about. So he wrote an amazing book years ago called Among the Thugs. He wrote Heat, which is about how cool and hip and terrifying the restaurant world was before people knew famous chefs. And now he has one called Dirt, Adventures in Lyon as a Chef in Training, Father and Sleuth Looking for the Secret of French Cooking. And by the way, I am sick and tired of nonfiction books that have these long, 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 long titles. It's too hard. But he's back. So we are back with him next week. Everybody, thank you for listening. I hope everybody listening will go to Apple iTunes or somewhere else and review us because that's always very helpful. But here is my deserted island question for, now I'm going to do first name alphabetical. So David, Disha, and then Yona.
Tori, before you do that, I don't mean to interrupt, but you do have one question. It wasn't put in the Q&A box, but it was put in the chat.
What's the question, Claude? Go.
So Michelle says her 10-year-old daughter is watching with her and wants to know from Yona and Deisha, you know, what are your favorite books from childhood? And do you have any recommendations for her when she's writing? But I guess you talked about the recommendations as far as a writer, but just some of your favorite childhood books.
Excellent question.
Yeah. I loved Virginia Hamilton, anything by Virginia Hamilton, that and the visuals, like, wow. And Mildred D. Taylor. She might not be, I don't know. Definitely I would recommend Virginia Hamilton.
Nice.
Yeah. I would add to Yona's list, Rosa Guy. She might be a little, like, maybe when she's 12, unless she's a very precocious reader. And then Louise Merriweather. One of my all-time favorite books is a book called Daddy Was a Number Runner. And I read that starting when I was in fifth grade, and I would just read it over and over again. And it's set in 1930s Harlem, and it's a coming of age story, a very different life than my own. But it really was the first time I saw myself in a story as a Black girl. And it really made an impression on me.
Nice. Excellent recommendations. Excellent question.
And there's one more from Mary Faye. She says, what fiction do you read? Do you guys read escapism, romance, historical fiction?
All of it. I do not discriminate. No, no shame. Yeah.
Deisha, do you pick and choose?
I haven't read a lot of genre fiction. It's been a while. Funny thing is, some of my best friends love romance. So I feel like I get those stories secondhand. Like, I could name all of, like, the hot writers and, like, who has the best scenarios and all of that kind of stuff. But I've never been, you know, into that genre. But I'm always looking for humor. And I like satire. And a great find is a book by Fran Ross. She's the first Black woman to write a satirical novel in 1974, and it's called Oreo, and it is still hilarious. It is still timely. She deals with race, class, sex, sexuality, all of those things. And so I like to try and laugh. So Samantha Irby, her trio of memoir in essays, I come back to those time and time again as well. So that's not fiction, but I'm looking for humor for the most part.
Awesome. I always love it when there are author events and people ask the questions, always want recommendations about other kinds of books. It's like, no, we're here to sell these books. Okay, really, here's the last question. One holiday gift book. If you could only pick one gift to give as a holiday gift book between now and the end of 2020, and that can't come soon enough, what will it be? And this one, I get to go last. David, you have to go first.
No, well, that's fine. Susan already mentioned it, unfortunately.
Which one?
Cast.
Cast is great. Fabulous.
I just started reading it, but it is just, obviously all the mentions are well-deserved. They're incredible. It's incredible.
Yep.
There is this line. This is a great line. I saw this in the New York Times, but I wanted to read it because it's, you know, when if you're a writer and you read somebody else who's a really good writer and you just go, I can never write anything that good. You know,
you're in awe of it. You're in awe of it. Yeah.
But this is such a great line. As we go about our daily lives, cast is the wordless usher in a darkened theater, flashlight cast down in the aisles, guiding us to our assigned seats for a performance. It's good. It's really good because I used to be an usher and I know exactly what that visual is. And it's so good. It's so right. And it's just like, wow. Man, it's awesome. Good.
I know someone who's read Cast several times and she says it was life-changing for her. Yeah. Okay, Yona, if you could only give one book this year as a holiday gift, what would it be?
It'd probably be Legend Born. Mm-hmm. Can't remember. Amanda, maybe you can. You're in the book selling business. Is it Tracy Dion? I think is the author. It's a great book. It's so smart. It's got magic. It's a YA book.
Right.
So it's just, I don't know, it's got a millennial touch to it and a youthful, it's just great magic.
I know of it only because I've been trying hard, and I swear to God, it's a 2021 resolution for this show, is to have some YA authors on, because there's just some incredible work being done. Really incredible work. Okay, Disha, one holiday gift book.
I want this book to get a lot of attention. It's called America Mine by Sasha Banks. It's a collection of poetry. And it came on my radar when Jason Reynolds, you talk about YA, he tweeted out that this is a young writer who, I don't know the details, but somehow shut out of traditional publishing. And so she's going on her own with this book. Wow. And he tweeted out, and people in droves have ordered this book, and I was among them. And then the poet emailed us all to thank us and said, Jason sent you. And so I think that's just such a great story about writing community and being a good literary citizen and using your privilege to help someone else. So I would encourage people to buy America Mine by Sasha Banks.
Nice. Okay. Mine, I cannot give to anyone till after the holidays are over, is Shuggie Bain. And again, as we were talking before the show, I heard about this strange little book months and months and months and months ago. It is so gripping. And it is the story of this Scottish kid, alcoholic mother, broken family, and just everything he went through just trying to survive, much less get out of there. And I have never read anything. And then I've listened to it as well. The voices are incredible. I've never read anything that I just thought, I can't stop. And I don't know how the author Donald Stewart did this, but as scary and sad and tragic as so many of the situations are, you just keep going page to page going, it's going to get better. I just know it. You know, I just know it's going to get better. It just keeps you going. It's phenomenal. But the story's in it, and it's based loosely on Donald Stewart's upbringing as a child in Scotland, somewhat autobiographical. So it's a little sad that way. So I'm going to wait till after the holidays. But in the meantime, Susan, who hopefully will watch and listen to the whole show, thank you so much for bringing us all together. Amanda, good luck to everybody at the Penguin. We love you. We love what you're doing there for 90 years plus. Keep it up. Everyone, I love that I can hold the books up this time, David, and people will actually see them. Everyone should get You Don't Have to Go to Mars for Love, and at the same time, get The Secret Lives of Church Ladies. They are fabulous books. Disha and Yoni, you are fabulous to give us so much of your time, and you're so inspirational.
Thank you.
Wish you the best of luck.
Awesome.
David, Claude, thank you for everything, my friends. Everybody, wash your hands, wear a mask, stay healthy, and we'll talk to you next week.